New insights on Habit 5. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. After graduating from business school, I had a difficult decision to make. I had an offer to join Disney's Attractions Planning Department in Orlando, which might just have been the coolest job in the world. On the other hand, I had an offer to join the company my father started 10 years earlier, Covey Leadership Center. Around this time, I tagged along with my father while he was teaching Habit 5 to 200 senior leaders. He was speaking about the skill of empathy, or how to rephrase the content and reflect the feeling of what another person is saying. His point was that if you can learn to listen empathically, you can be 10 times more effective with people. To demonstrate, Dad posed as a teenager who wanted to drop out of school, and he walked around asking various participants to play his father and to try to listen empathically to what he was really communicating. Well, these leaders didn't get it at all and kept blowing it again and again. They kept responding by probing, advising, or sharing their own autobiographies. But Dad kept at it. The participants started getting frustrated and wondered what the point was, questioning, "Who is this guy and what is he trying to prove?" The atmosphere was borderline chaos. Finally, somebody managed to reflect back an empathic response, and Dad, still posing as the son, opened up a bit. Then someone else reflected back another empathic response, and they began to get the hang of it. Little by little, as they responded empathically in the role of father, Dad kept opening up in the role of son. Eventually, the son's real issue was unraveled and solved. It was a transformative experience. These leaders, all competent and accomplished people, understood empathy and its importance for the first time in their lives. The atmosphere in the room turned from chaos to enlightenment. These leaders would never be the same. I leaned back in my chair and thought, I'm working here. Since there seemed to be so many questions about the ins and outs of Habit 5, for this chapter I thought I would share my insights in a question and answer format. So here's the first question. Should you use Habit 5 all the time? My answer, no. There is a time and place for empathic listening. Use empathic listening when the topic is important, sensitive, or really personal, like when a colleague needs career advice, or you're having a communication problem with a loved one. These conversations take time and can't be rushed. A good rule of thumb is to use empathy anytime emotions are high. You don't need to do it in casual conversations or everyday small talk. If somebody comes up to you and says, "Where's the bathroom? I gotta go real bad," you don't need to say, "So, if I understand you correctly, you really need to go." Next question. Why is this habit so hard? If you struggle with this habit, you're in good company. Of all the habits, this is the one my father struggled with most. He used to joke, "It's hard to listen when you know you're right." Habit 5 is the habit most people think they do well, but actually do the worst. "Yeah, I think I'm a pretty good listener," they say. But in reality, they're listening from their own frame of reference and not from the frame of reference of another person. They listen with an agenda and with the intent to respond, not to understand. They never get into the other person's head, and they miss out on so much, including not uncovering core issues and never fully engaging people's hearts as they could. Listening empathically gets even harder when you're in a leadership position, because people tend to defer to authority. That is why so many senior leaders are poor listeners and do most of the talking anytime they're in the room. University of California professor Dr. Kiltner coined the term the power paradox to describe how leaders gain influence through empathy and other practices that serve others, but lose those skills as they gain influence and power. In fact, the further you go up the ladder, the less empathy leaders tend to have. If you are in a leadership role, do a gut check. The next time you're in a team meeting, ask yourself, what percentage of the words spoken in the meeting today came from my own mouth? If there were 6 people in the room and 80% of the words came from you, that is a problem. My colleague Jay Hudson found out how listening through an autobiographical lens can cause serious misunderstanding. Here's what he said. When I worked at the Colorado Department of Corrections, I learned about an incident in one of our units between a sergeant and an offender. This offender was being transferred to another facility and had to undergo a routine property inventory before being transferred. My sergeant, who was completing the property inventory, had a speech impediment of stuttering. It never impacted his duties, and in fact, despite his challenge, he was an outstanding communicator. However, when I arrived at the unit, he was extremely upset because this offender was making fun of him by mocking his stuttering. I then turned my attention to this offender and learned that he too was really upset because the sergeant who did the property inventory on him had been imitating the offender's stuttering. Now I got it. Both the sergeant and the offender had speech impediments that caused them to stutter. Both thought the other person was mocking them. Little did they know that they both struggled with the same challenge. Once the sergeant realized what had taken place, he went to this offender, shook his hand, and apologized for the misunderstanding. Anyone familiar with the correctional environment knows that a misunderstanding can create a volatile situation very quickly. Seeking first to understand in all situations is key to preserving safety and security. Next question. Do you struggle with this habit? Yes, I do. I have to continually remind myself to get out of my own head and into the head of another. In college, I became the starting quarterback for Brigham Young University, BYU, which was a dream of mine. I went to BYU because, at the time, they threw the ball more than anyone else, and I loved to throw. But right before my senior year, after 2 years of being the starter, I tore my ACL and needed to get reconstructive knee surgery, which effectively ended my football career. I was devastated. So after I got married and we had a son, I was determined to teach him everything I knew about being a quarterback. I even named him after me, Michael Sean. I taught him how to take command of the huddle. I taught him how to read defenses, how to stay poised, and how to throw the deep pass. I spent countless hours coaching all of his teams from elementary through middle school. He became a very good quarterback, and people would say, "Hey, Sean, your boy played great today." And I would light up inside. But the summer before ninth grade, Michael Sean came to me out of the blue and said, "Dad, I don't think I want to play football this season." The first thing that came out of my mouth was, "Are you serious? Do you realize how many years I've spent training you?" "I know, Dad, thanks. I just don't want to play." As you can imagine, I did everything I could to persuade him, including making him feel guilty by saying, "So, after developing all these skills, you just want to throw it all away?" But nothing I said seemed to influence him. Only a few days later, I found myself at work where my team and I were designing a workshop around empathic listening, and it suddenly hit me. Oh my goodness, I'm not doing any of this. I'd grown up with this content, and I'd even written a book about it, yet I'd forgotten to live this habit. I had to go back to the beginning and win a private victory. Using the self-awareness of habit one, I caught myself and created a space to choose my response. I realized how much my ego was tied to the success of my son. I thought I was doing what was best for him, but in reality, I could see that I was trying to live out my own unfulfilled desires through him. I moved to habit two and thought, do I want to raise a son or a quarterback? And you know what? I really had to think about it. I'd spent a decade hoping that my son would become an all-state quarterback. Then I shook myself and thought, duh, of course, I want to raise a son. I wanted to stay close to him. I wanted him to fulfill his own dreams, not mine. A few days later, the conversation naturally came up. Michael Sean, tell me more about not wanting to play football this season. This time, I did not have any agenda. I just wanted to understand him. Well, he said, I just didn't have a good experience last year. So it was a tough year for you? No kidding, Dad, I got killed. You wouldn't understand because you were always big for your grade, but I'm way smaller than everyone. So you feel like I wouldn't understand what it's like to get killed out there because I was big at your age and you feel small? Exactly, Dad. And just look at how much everyone grew this summer, and I didn't. I'm like 30 pounds lighter than everyone. I'm going to get killed out there, even worse this year. So you're scared about playing and getting hurt because you're so much smaller than everyone? I said. This went on for about 10 minutes. I didn't know he felt that way. I knew he was on the smaller side, but I had no idea how beaten up he'd felt the year before and how afraid he was for the upcoming year. He then said, "What do you think I should do, Dad?" I'd spent days trying to persuade him with no result, but within 10 minutes of empathic communication, he was, for the first time, open to my influence. "I think you should do whatever you want to do, Michael Sean. If you want to play, that's great. And if you don't, that's fine, too." "Really, Dad?" he said excitedly. "Really." A few days later, he came to me and said, "Dad, I know that you're good either way, but I'm going to play football this year." So Michael Sean played that year and the year after, but then he had ankle problems which involved many surgeries, and he was unable to continue playing. For me, the ending of his football career was no big deal. What I truly cared about was that he had blossomed into an amazing young man. It can be hard to stay close to teenagers, but we did, in high school, college, and beyond. And when he was facing big issues such as, "Should I marry my girlfriend, big?" he would come to me. This moment could have been a bad fork in the road for our relationship, but thankfully it was a good one, and one that I'll always cherish. Besides, my nephew Britton Covey has become an All-American football player, so I can live vicariously through him. We increasingly communicate via text and email. Does that change anything about this habit? Yes, it definitely does. I've seen this happen on my team all the time. Someone gets upset and sends a pointed email. The other person writes back a novel. Then they start copying people and more people. And I'm like, for crying out loud, just get on the phone and talk it through. The use of technology strips out the tone of voice and facial expressions that help us empathize. So anytime you're dealing with an important emotional issue, do not email or text. At some point, meet face to face, or at least talk it out over the phone. An emoji just isn't going to cut it. Next question. What if you can't get to a resolution through empathic listening? Resolving the conflict isn't actually the goal of empathic listening. Understanding is. When I was about 14 years old, my family and I went to a movie, and I was really upset. I was one of 9 kids, and I hated being carted around like I was just another number. I said some mean things and hurt everybody. And my dad, instead of getting mad, took me aside when we got home and asked me what was wrong. I was irresponsible in my reply. "You don't care about anybody. I'm not like everybody else in the family, and you can't treat me like I am." Dad could have made a big scene out of this. He could have gotten mad or forced me to apologize to everyone. Instead, he just listened, reflected back, and sought to understand. He didn't agree. He just understood. I never came around, but he never got mad at me either. He just let my anger dissipate. We didn't technically resolve anything, but because of his acknowledgement, I didn't feel any need to rebel later. In retrospect, it was very smart of him. On a related issue, my father used to say, "Let negative energy fly out open windows. Don't take it on." Sometimes your kids, spouse, or coworkers will make negative or irresponsible comments, and instead of taking it on and trying to resolve it, ignore that it was even uttered. It's like giving people a free pass for something they said in the heat of the moment. Let it fly out an open window. Instead of closing the window and letting it bounce around the room, you'll both get hurt. Next question. Habits 4 through 6 seem to overlap. What's the difference? Habits 4, 5, and 6 are different, but work together. Over the years, we've taught students the mnemonic root, route, and fruit. Habit 4, think win-win, is the foundation or root of effective relationships. The route for getting there is to practice habit 5, seek first to understand, then to be understood. And the fruit you produce by practicing habits 4 and 5 is synergy, which is habit 6. Next question. Sometimes when I try empathic listening, the other person feels like I'm using a technique. What should I do? People will sense immediately if empathic listening isn't genuine. You need to have good intent, not just the skill. When facing a relationship conflict, most people keep working on the public victory. For example, my spouse and I can't get along. We need to do habit 5. Yes, that may be true, but you may not be ready for it yet. As I learned with my son, Michael Sean, many relationship challenges can only be solved by winning the private victory first. You have to go back to habit 1 and use your self-awareness, conscience, imagination, and independent will to get clear on your motives. Use habit 2 to envision what you want to do differently, and then make it happen through habit 3. Seeking first to understand another person makes you vulnerable because you may learn some things that are threatening to you. To genuinely practice habit 5, you may need the emotional security that comes from first winning the private victory.